ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, Fran Kelly here. Politics Now is coming right up, but did you know I have another show called the Radio National Hour? It's where I talk about global events.
They want to either acquire Greenland and buy us, or they want to occupy us.
And talk to movie stars.
It changed me. It's been the creative highlight of my career, to be honest.
And sometimes it's just one Fran talking to another.
By the time I was, say, 30, I'd already seen platform shoes come back twice. And in my opinion, they were a bad idea to begin with.
Ah, Leibowitz, you crack me up. Check out the Radio National Hour right here on ABC Listen.
The Reserve Bank of Australia has increased interest rates by 0.25 percentage points, taking the cash rate to 4.1%. And while the rise was widely anticipated, it is still very difficult news for people with mortgages and the Albanese government to manage. So as inflation remains sticky and the financial pressures from the war in the Middle East start to very much hit home, have you seen the price of petrol? Is there more economic turbulence ahead? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Carrington Clark.
And Carrington, you are the perfect guest for today because you've been up at the crack of sparrow watching the markets closely for Radio National Breakfast. And in very exciting news, you're about to join the ABC podcast family with a new show called ABC Business Daily, right?
That is absolutely correct. Perfection is a big label to try to carry, but I will do my best. We are very excited about this new podcast. It gives people the opportunity on the daily to get an idea of what's happening in business. We'll be trying to look at those big macro business stories, but also look under the hood when it comes to some more specific business stories to give people some expert commentary from the excellent business team that we have here at the ABC to hopefully give them more of what they want and to do those deep dives when we need to. We'll also have Alan Kohler, the great Alan Kohler, with his own program, which will be coming out once a week, where he'll be grilling CEOs, business leaders, founders, and once again, pick their brains about some of those big picture ideas that are working their way around the zeitgeist and to try to give our audience a better understanding of how the world is ticking along.
That's excellent. So you get your daily politics fix from us, you get your daily business hit from you. That's what people need. Okay. Well, what people don't need, boom, boom, is an interest rate rise. And yet the economy, according to the Reserve Bank of Australia, does need it. And that is really inherently the contradiction of a market economy like ours. So the Reserve Bank has delivered this news. It's taking the cash rate to 4.1%. Now, this is really expected. 80% of all of the kind of different predictors were saying it would happen, and then it did. What I think is really interesting, though, there's so many interesting angles here, but one is how split the board was, Carrington. Like, that is, this is a close vote. So what was five voted in favour? We don't know the names of how they voted, and there's a reason for that. We don't, you know, they don't want people to turn up to Reserve Bank governors and board members' homes and yell at them. But five said, yep, we need to increase rates. Four said, no, we do not and should not. What did you make of that?
Yeah, just one swing voter determined whether or not we would see this hike in interest rates. And as you say, so the money markets were predicting 80% chance of this rate hike occurring. All the big four banks, their chief economists believed that they were going to hike interest rates, but the board itself was much more split. And the difficulty here, I think, for these members was that, yes, they knew that inflation had been too high. That's why we'd seen the interest rate hike last month, because they had seen the data coming out at the second half of 2025 that showed that inflation wasn't under control in the sense that it wasn't moving towards that target band, which is the Reserve Bank wants inflation to be between 2 and 3%. They want it to be predictable for people because they think that allows people to make good, rational decisions about when to buy, when to spend their money. It was above that, and it didn't look like it was coming down quickly enough. So that's why they hiked back in February. But obviously what's happened since then was a major international crisis. We've seen the attacks by the US and Israel on Iran, Iran's retaliatory attacks on not only America and Israel, but also its immediate neighbours, which has sent the price of energy skyrocketing, particularly oil. And that's why even here in Australia, so far removed from that conflict, people are feeling the pinch. And that's why the Reserve Bank in this statement says they were both looking at the data before this attack and could see that inflation wasn't where they wanted it to be. But they say in the statement that they're also looking at petrol prices. And if there is a prolonged period of inflated energy prices, then that's going to lead to even longer, that's going to lead to even more inflation in the longer term. And so they felt, or at least five out of the nine felt, they had to go now.
Yeah, they did. And the government's response is key here. I mean, of course, it's on the label, it's a politics podcast. There's a lot of politics in your cost of living going up like this. And we know how disgruntled people are at the moment. I mean, it's not some sort of fantasy to me or some odd thing that One Nation's been polling well. I think there's a lot of grievance in the community. So just watch that space for the increase on the grievance meter as people pay on a $600,000 mortgage, for instance. And a lot of people have much higher ones, by the way, than that. But I think it's like $95 a month extra. That is a lot of extra money coming out of your bank account that you can't spend on, I don't know, your kid's uniform. Mm. I've got to buy a lot of uniform stuff at the moment. Like, so it's on my mind. Like, these things that actually are big hits. And so this is really going to upset people. So the government and its positioning around all of this, that we saw a pretty ashen-faced, is that fair to say, treasurer just stand up. Jim Chalmers knew this was coming, so you can imagine they've been practicing their lines. So what are those lines? Well, this is one of them. He's preempted the attack from the opposition that you are no doubt going to see. In fact, I'm about to interview Tim Wilson from the opposition, and I suspect I will hear a lot of this, which is that government spending is responsible for our wicked inflation problem. Jim Chalmers said that Tim Wilson will tell all kinds of lies in the coming days about the impact of government spending in his press conference and in his statement. He makes the point that the statement from the Reserve Bank when it comes to government spending says growth in private demand strengthened substantially more than was expected in mid-2025, and that the statement is why they attribute the higher capacity pressures towards the end of the year. He says they do not talk about government spending. Now, we're recording this before Michelle Bullock, the Reserve Bank governor, gives her press conference where she will be absolutely one prediction, which I know will come true. So there's no risk, zero risk for me.
Zero risk here.
Zero risk. She will be hammered with questions about government spending and whether this is part of the reason. How she handles that, well, that's to be seen. But Carrington, is the treasurer right when he says nothing to see here from us? Because that's essentially what he's saying. He does, however, to be fair, say the government knows they have to help people with cost of living pressures, though, because people are absolutely under the pump.
Well, based on recent experience, Michelle Bullock will definitely try to sidestep any direct criticism of the government. One of the interesting things for me, I've been away for 5 years serving as a foreign correspondent for the ABC. I'm now back into the business rounds. One of the things that changed in the time that I was away is that the Reserve Bank instituted these press conferences following their decisions. They also started announcing whether or not we had a split vote. So in some ways, this is a much more transparent process than it was before I left. But it also means that you have this situation now when they make a big decision where the Reserve Bank governor comes out, gets grilled by journalists. And obviously, part of what journalists want to know is the Reserve Bank willing to criticise the government? And it's a very difficult position for them to be in. And normally what the Reserve Bank will say is, it's not up to us to tell the government what to do when it comes to spending. What we have to do is say, we're assessing the economy as it is today, and we are therefore adjusting interest rates in the appropriate fashion. Now, the Reserve Bank in the past, I must say, has been more willing to talk about the impact of government spending on the economy. It's also a major research organization that does a lot of papers. And I think it is fair to say that, of course, government spending has an impact on inflation in the economy. It adds to the demand side of the economy. And the question becomes, and the debate becomes among economists, about how much spending is the right amount of spending for the government. And one of the arguments, particularly from those on the right of centre, if you will, is to say government spending is inherently less productive than allowing the market to do its job. Mm. And government spending is financed by taxing people. And so that's money that could otherwise be spent on other things. So this is why this is a political debate between the two sides. Mm-hmm. So, but that is the debate. What is the right amount of government spending, particularly at a time where there seems to be constraints? And what the Reserve Bank will talk about is the need to get productivity up, to talk about improving the productivity of the economy in order for us to be able to create more stuff without actually without inflation getting higher and higher and higher. And so let's watch how she tries to work around that. But the Reserve Bank does not want to be the umpire or between these two sides of politics. Michelle Bullock does not want to be in that position.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be tricked up to be sort of entering into a political debate in a really febrile political environment. You can understand that. But equally, of course, like you say, the Reserve Bank does and has views on how much money is circulating in the economy. How can it not, given the amount of money that's in the economy is absolutely linked to the level of inflation, right? I'm not an economist, but like it's basic 101 economics. This is not hard stuff. I think what's interesting, though, is that the Treasury is buttering us up for budget cuts and taking money out of the economy. And I point you to this part of the statement from what he said. He said, we take into consideration the pressures on people, the economic circumstances. I'm going to get into this in some detail on Thursday at the Australian Business Economist because that's an important factor in the considerations and in the government's work. So basically what he's saying is he's going to be making cuts in the May budget. He's going to let us know a bit about his direction on Thursday. So he's trying to almost get ahead of, okay, say, well, the RBA is not saying that it's about how much government spending there is. However, the government is going to take action on the level of government spending.
Yeah, the other thing from that, he also spoke about strengthening the budget, and you can do that in the other direction, which is to say we need to increase the amount of revenue we're receiving, which could be about potentially changing the capital gains discount.
Well, my friend, you talk of a discount on capital gains, and that's, of course, 50% discount. A certain Senate committee has just landed, and it has says that it consistently heard that the current design of the capital gains tax discount results in a degree of concessional treatment relative to labour income, which can distort decision making and incentivise tax planning. It says the design of the capital gains tax discount has the potential to distort the allocation of investment across the economy. Basically, it calls for change to capital gains tax discount. Now, that's just a Senate committee, but it's building momentum, throwing it back to you, Carrington, for change. It helps the Treasurer build the case for change, right?
Yeah, and it seems at this point pretty obvious that Jim Chalmers wants this budget to be a reform budget. He wants to be a Treasurer that's remembered for making substantial changes to the way that the economy functions. And it appears that the capital gains discount is one of those issues that he wants to tackle. They talk about the importance of intergenerational fairness, that it's trying to create a situation which is fairer to young people, particularly when it comes to the property market, and that the current discount current discount for capital gains is just too big, and it means that it makes it even more difficult for people who are trying to compete with investors who are already in the property market. So it appears the ground has been set up for this. What is interesting about the current international crisis is the crisis actually helpful for the government? In that, is it an opportunity?
In blame shifting, you mean?
Well, are people more willing to listen to big ideas, talk about strengthening the budget because there is a crisis and never waste a crisis? Or is a time when people are even more anxious about affording their bills, when they go, as you say, and go to the petrol bowser and are shocked by how expensive it is to fill up a tank, is that not the time to be doing a big reform budget? And I think this will be the tension among Jim Chalmers and his cabinet colleagues about that political debate about when is the right time to try to have this discussion with the Australian public about why you need to make substantial changes to the budget.
Now, we've got to go away in a second because the Reserve Bank Governor is going to be on her feet and we all need to watch her. We love watching her and you'll hear that too. But I must say, fuel obviously is the adjacent issue at the moment, and that's a big problem for the government. I mean, it's so obvious. You don't have to listen to this podcast to know why it's a problem for the government. You just have to turn up to your petrol station and you know. The Treasurer has just said in his press conference that they don't anticipate fuel rationing. This comes after, I think, Richard Marles left a bit of the door open earlier today. He's the Deputy Prime Minister. He wasn't saying yes, but, you know, he wasn't ruling it out. The Treasurer is kind of trying to put the sort of lid on that. But, Carrington, it's a red-hot mess, the old fuel situation, isn't it? Yes, the government's been trying to address it, but it came out of the blocks a little slowly, I think. It's, at least in its messaging, it says it was busy making plans, but we didn't really hear about them enough. And now they're trying to address it, but there's an acute issue in the economy and people are freaking out.
Yeah, I think it's been an interesting issue to watch how it's played out politically, because obviously as soon as we saw that massive spike in the international energy price, I mean, I was watching it from Radio National Breakfast and seeing just after we came off air, we saw this massive spike when the price of Brent crude, the international benchmark, nearly hit $120 a barrel. Now, it came down a bit from there, but you could tell that this suddenly the market had taken this seriously and realized that this could be a prolonged war, that perhaps Donald Trump didn't have an exit strategy and this wouldn't be a short, sharp conflict and everything would go back to normal. The government here, understandably, was trying to tell everyone, don't panic. We have long-term contracts in place. Australia is not going to be cut off from international fuel supply. The difficulty with that message is that people, understandably, want to secure their own businesses. Mm-hmm. And we were seeing issues in some regional and rural areas where they were starting to decide who did or didn't have access to fuel on any particular day. And people, panic begets panic. And the government's message of everything's fine just wasn't what people were experiencing on the ground. And then obviously that set off a bigger debate about, well, why doesn't Australia have the necessary fuel reserves that the International Energy Agency recommends, which is 90 days? Government's response was, well, it's prohibitively expensive. It's going to cost us $20 billion was the figure that was handed out. But I think that debate about, well, what is a reasonable cost to ensure that Australia does have adequate fuel in reserve is a legitimate question politically, because this is effectively the cost of insurance. How much are you willing to pay to make sure that Australia has the fuel here and when it comes to refining capacity, just in case we do have a situation where suddenly we are cut off? And I was watching what was happening with some of our trading partners. Australia sources about 2/3 of our refined fuel from three countries. It's Singapore, number one, about 22%. South Korea, just below them, 21%. And then Malaysia. South Korea very quickly put its own domestic price caps in place because it was concerned about the fluctuations they were seeing in pricing. And then what did they do? They said, we're also going to cap how much fuel we allow these refiners to export, because obviously if you're capping the price at home, you can make more money by selling it offshore if you're getting a better price. And they didn't want to see that occurring because you limit your supply at home. But although that hasn't interrupted Australia's supply, it obviously raises that question of, well, if this is prolonged, will we see some of our trading partners cut Australia off? And how vulnerable does that leave Australia, given we don't have the capacity to create our own fuel here and we don't have it stored? So it is a big political question, and that is a difficult one for the government to walk, and they are now talking about it as a crisis that needs attention.
Yeah, they sure are. Just briefly, are we going to see more rate hikes?
Well, interestingly, because of the 5-4 split, before this it was almost everyone was in agreement that we'd see a second hike in May. That's come down, according to the money markets, to about 30%, given it maybe we only need one swing vote to switch the other way and we won't see it. However, it's still pricing in the money market, you know, the collective still believes we'll see two more rate hikes by next year. So maybe it won't happen in May, maybe it happens later, but it really is all going to depend on what happens with inflation and what happens with that energy price.
Sure does. Carrington, good luck with the new show. I'll be listening. And as we mentioned at the top, tomorrow you will be able to find and follow ABC Business Daily and hear more from Carrington and the business team. Tomorrow I'll be joined by David Spears for the latest developments. If you have a question, send them to theparty@abc.net.au. See you, Carrington.
See you later.